to Psy.
Spend the day with Psy.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Sairam, dear listeners. Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to Afternoon Satsang. This is indeed an August assembly, for this is the first satsang in the month of August. And we are continuing from a satsang that we left midway last week, a satsang on goal setting and goal getting. And before we proceed into the exciting, enlightening, elevating and amazing second half of this satsang, as always, we offer our most humble salutations at the lotus feet of our dear Swami, who is ever present here, listening, guiding, goading and inspiring each and every statement that is made here. As always, I'm joined by Brother Prem from Premier Radio Sai, and the special feature, like last week, we have Brother Amay. Sairam Prem, Sairam Amay.
Sairam Amay, Sairam Arvind. And it indeed was a very good discussion, and I feel even as we were completing, I don't know whether Amay got that feedback, one of our listeners wrote back saying that it was very nice. It was very useful in the sense, you know, that's what is more important, because I think whatever we do here, whatever we speak about here in the afternoon satsang, in the end we always try to say, what is the takeaway, what is the practical lesson which you can take away with it? Because Swami always insisted on spirituality which can be practiced. You know, you don't come and wear spirituality and then dress yourself out of spirituality and then go about your real work. I think that's why this goal getting is such a beautiful thing. Maybe, Amay, we should quickly run through the points we had last week before we can extend the discussion to what we're going to talk today.
Sure, yeah. In fact, that is what is called applied spirituality. That's how we define what awareness class is. So just to take up from there, this is something that we do in our awareness class at the university, Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. Mm-hmm. And we quickly, what we did was, in the last time, we saw what is the necessity to have a goal in life. We started from there. And we said that simply because we are human beings and we have been endowed with this wonderful, wonderful apparatus called this body, this human body, which itself is a magnificent machine that has been given to us, which is an intelligent machine.
Which has the capability to plan.
Exactly. And one of the chief features of this machine is its ability to look much beyond our immediate necessities, our immediate requirements.
You know, and even as you're saying that, sorry to break in, I was reminded of a little silly video that somebody forwarded. You know, I think most of us would have seen it. There was this old man who was, you know, cooking a meal. So he was going about this cooking, and in that video they show that he just pulls out a small little cutting board and he's cutting vegetables on it, and as they zoom into that, he's actually cutting vegetables on an iPad. Okay, and he's just cutting it and very casually goes about the whole thing, cuts, chops the things, puts the thing, and then he gets a call from his daughter, and the daughter asks, "Dad, did you like my new gift? Have you used the tablet which I sent you?" He says, "No, I didn't get anything, but I really like the cutting board which you sent." He said, "You know, that's precisely what we are all doing. You know, definitely an iPad would be quite useful as a cutting board, but if you're going to use that for doing something as trivial as that, you know, that's from what Swami says, Jantunam Narajan Madurlupam. And he says that this is such a grand gift I'm giving you. So much more can be done with this, but if you're going to use it like an iPad being used for a vegetable cutting board, I think that's what we all are doing. In a sense,
that's beautiful, you know. And because this whole topic of goal setting and goal getting is just to ensure that we don't make cutting boards out of iPads. I mean, a human life is so much more worthwhile and so much more meaningful. We don't spend it like just for eating, sleeping, earning a living, and
absolutely. I'm at this point, I'm reminded of what once Bhagwan was telling. He's telling boys, you know, there are moments where Swami is so pained that boys are just using Bhagwan for his beauty, for his, you know, his physical beauty, or, you know, for what he's capable of giving in terms of, you know, giving us boons. You know, it's like asking coffee powder from a Kalpa Vriksha, you know, as Swami puts it. And one day, you know, he was mentioning, boys, what you are having is a 1,000-faceted diamond, and you are not even using it like a paperweight. Swami said that we are not even using Swami as a paperweight. You know, it was such a kind of a eye-opening statement, and it hurt a little bit also. I mean, imagine the hurt that Swami must be feeling, that here I am, the infinite almighty, come for a little time to spend on earth, and here are you boys, you know, who I have taken to myself, and you don't want to utilize me. You are not even utilizing me. So for just, you know, our irony is such, Swami wants us to use this human body to achieve great things. Here is God in human form, and we are not even using that. You know, so that's the irony. That's what I could kind of make out from what you were saying.
Absolutely. You know, another thing which always comes to my mind is, you know, when they make these sports cars, the other day I was seeing a program where they were saying how these sports cars are made. One of the things which is very nice about these machines is, you know, the sound the machine does when you start the vehicle.
Right.
So even if...
That's what that gives the oomph.
Yeah, gives you that, you know, that kick when you start it. So what they do is sometimes your machine is so well-oiled and, you know, well-made, it does not make that sound. So they add things to give you that sound because people like it. Okay. So, you know, imagine a guy who goes and buys, let's say, Aston Martin or an BMW, for that sound which gives when you start the vehicle. So he spends something like $500,000 and buys this car, and every day gets into it, just starts the engine, listens to that sound, enjoys it, switches off and comes off. And a neighbor who walks by says, "You fool, just take it for a ride, you have no idea how good that is." You know, that's what we are doing. We're just starting to use what this life is meant for, but we don't do it, you know, go that full distance and really enjoy it the full,
exactly,
to its entirety.
So I guess that pretty much sums up whatever we discussed last time, in a sense that we have this opportunity, we have to make use of this opportunity. And I think somewhere along the way that we figured out that there were so many barriers to our ability to achieve it. And that's where we came across this wonderful matrix that we were talking about, and I think we finished with that. We were talking about the three, four quadrants of the matrix.
I think we started describing the various quadrants.
Yes, we took a matrix where on the x-axis we have importance. So we have things that are either not important or very important. It's like a digital matrix. It's not gradual. So things that are not important versus things which are important. And on the y-axis we have things which are urgent and things that are not urgent. So therefore, the four different combinations which of these we get is things which are very important and very urgent. Examples like a baby crying or food cooking on the gas, which you need to attend to immediately. Things which are urgent but not important. It's like when you're doing your work, you're going through, you're studying, somebody interrupts and gives you, your mom comes and says, you know, you have to go and get this vegetable. It's not important for you, but it is urgent, it needs to be done. You're in the middle of a meeting and you get a phone call. The phone is beeping, disturbing everyone around. You need to pick it up. It may not be important for you. It might be a credit card guy calling, but it's important that you pick it up. So those are the two things. So we concluded that there's nothing basically that can be done about things which are urgent.
Urgent.
Whether they're important or unimportant.
They have to be attended to.
Yes. And then the other half of the matrix is about things which are not urgent. So things which are not urgent and not important. And things which are not urgent but important. Things which are not urgent and not important are all the wasteful activities. 50 to 60% of our days go in that. You know, having fun, entertainment, needed to some extent, but if we spend too much time on that, we spoke about addictions, video gaming, and different kind of addictions that the modern technology has brought up. These are absolutely wasteful things, and not absolutely, as we said, in small amount it's good because all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. But more or less, they have to be restricted to certain amounts of time only per day. If exceeded, it becomes very wasteful. Therefore, you know, pubbing, going to the pubs, clubbing, all these things, not urgent, not important. So these were the three quadrants we discussed, leaving behind the most important quadrant, which is not urgent, but important.
Yes, and in fact, as it is mentioned in this, the explanation of this matrix, this is where all your dreams exist. You know, it is extremely important for you in life, but it is not urgent. So the tendency, you know, that is, we give it a second priority. Mm-hmm. We don't give it that much priority because it's not urgent. Because oftentimes it so happens, and I've noticed this even in our hostel, you know, we are just in such a mad rush through the semester. One activity after the other, one activity, and it's almost like every weekend there's something urgent coming up. You know, it's like It's like, you know, you now, for example, the month of August, I can tell you, the kind of things lined up, which right. we are just moving out of the test, the CIEs, which we call, the tests are just getting over. Next week on 15th August, we have got a drama.
Independence Day drama.
17th August is Krishna Janmashtami. Right. We're going to have a program for that again. 21st August is MBA Day, which is the MBA anniversary day, which is again has a celebration. 24th August is, in between, we are also having our Rakhi Bandhan, which is Upakarma, Raksha Bandhan.
Right.
Yes. And then we are having the first year postgraduate boys are putting up a drama on 24th of August. Okay. And that's going to build up to Ganesh Chaturthi, on 29th. And then on 2nd, we have got the immersion. So it's like absolute hectic. Everything is urgent. There's nothing. And it's urgent and important. Right. So that's the kind of, you know, thing that we're going to have. And oftentimes we have noticed that a whole semester goes in we continuously just looking at more and more urgent things, completely oblivious to the important and not urgent things.
For example, you know, when you join as a student, I remember when I joined in 11th standard and the teacher was asking in the class, you know, he was asking each person, what is your objective in joining this school? Okay, because by then almost all the students, everyone was aware that nobody joins the Sri Sathya Sai Higher Secondary School so that you can top your school in marks or get high grades. That is just a side benefit, and even children who join the school know that. So it was a nice exercise. All the freshers who had joined in 11th grade were being asked, why did you join, why did you join, why did you join? So I heard some of the most fantastic answers. I remember one or two because they are deeply ingrained in me. Imprinted in my mind. Mm-hmm. One of them got up and said, sir, I want to become like Swami Vivekananda. I want to carry Bharatiya culture to the world and show what great Bharat is. I said, oh my God, which other place at 11th grade will somebody have such a dream?
Yes.
And like that, people were asking. And when they asked me, when sir asked me, I said, sir, I want to grow close to Swami. Because that was my objective in coming to the school. I didn't care for the... And that has been my objective throughout. Now, when, you know, Brother Amai says about things that are not urgent but important. For me, it was very important that I grow close to Swami and, you know, whatever that means. The understanding of growing close to Swami itself has undergone an evolution ever since I've joined. But the important thing is, it was not urgent. Because as soon as I joined at that time, there was a freshers day, then there was a treat, then there was a function, then different things keep coming up. But I feel it is very, very, very vital that I don't forget that at the end of my, whatever you call the short period of stay as a student in school, institute together, I should move closer towards my goal of becoming dear and near to Swami in whatever way my understanding is. But sometimes it may happen that being so lost in the day-to-day activities, we may just forget.
Yeah, if I can just mention over here one very interesting thing. In our awareness class, you know, we had... When students join, typically when they join the institute, extremely idealistic. You know, you typically find students in the third day of awareness class, they'll get up and say, sir, why are we sitting over here? Let's go transform the Naxalites. You know, let's go transform the terrorists. And we are like, wow, you know, this is really good, Joshi.
This is the kind of energy we need.
And, you know, couple of years later, you, at the end of this thing, you're much more sedate, you pass out. So here was this boy, you know, who, we had just played something in the class, we had played a game, and we were trying to, you know, impress upon students something, and it was about jobs. And we said, so what is the most important thing in our job? Okay, is it self-satisfaction, etc.? And he said, yes, brother, you have to bring, you know, we have to make Swami happy. That is the most important thing in the job. So we were just trying to play the devil's advocate. Saying, so you mean to say money is not important? Your salary is not important? And he, you know, emphatically said, no, brother, money will never be important for me. Never in my life will. Okay, and so that whole thing got over. And it's apparently, I did not know that, but it seems said, hold on to those words, okay? Just hold on to, mark those words. And someone who takes the class along with me, when Brother Aman, he was telling me this time, he had been to Gujarat and he had been to visit the ISRO, the Indian Space Research Organization.
Okay.
And he happened to see this brother over there. He had come for an interview. So he asked him, hey, how come you are over here? He says, no, brother, I've just been looking for jobs and, you know, so I came over here to get for the job interview. So he says, wow, lovely. So you like the job? He says, yeah, brother, job is good. Then what happened? He says, the pay package is not good. And you know, his mind, Brother Raman's mind, raced back to those, to that first or second day of awareness class when he said, "I will never work for money." So somewhere along the way, making Swami happy was important for him. But then somewhere along the way in his 2, 3, 4 year journey over here, earning money became urgent for him. You know, so what used to be important has now, in the importance probably is there. He still continues to feel that, yes, I want to make Swami happy. But then now the urgency of money is there. So there'll always be in life, you know, these kind of things which will keep coming and pushing down, you know, your most important thing. Which are not urgent, because they'll keep getting into the urgency. And that's how, you know, they say that when you were small, you wanted to pass tests. Then you became big, you looked for a job. Then you looked for a wife. Then you looked for your children's education. And eventually, you know, 60 years, 70 years have passed by. And what was the most important thing in your life was always forgotten.
I remember a very profound quote regarding this. You know, so beautiful it is. Because of this habit or trait of pushing down things which are important but are not urgent in favor for things which are urgent, it so happens that somebody had once said that we lead our lives as if we are never going to die. No, because we feel no problem. There's a life to look after.
Those things which are not urgent and important, that's how we treat it. You know,
so we can look after it. It's our dream. Okay, I can. Yeah,
spirituality.
Yes, I can please Swami. Yeah, I've got a whole life. See, the thing is, if you lead your life as if you're never going to die, when your death finally comes, you will die as if you have never lived your life. That's what it.
Talking about this, that which is urgent taking over that which is important and not urgent. I think it also boils down to this one fact. You know, yesterday I was talking to one of our alumnus. When he joined the university, he said, "No, I want to dedicate my life to Swami. I want to live with Swami. Whatever job is there, I want to do. I want to stick on here." He was very passionate about it, and he went and one of his teachers, lecturers, asked him, "So, what do you wish to do after you complete your studies?" So he said, "Sir, I want to serve Swami. I want to stay back here." So this teacher was very calm, and you know, he didn't say that, "Wow, very nice of you." So first of all, that reaction surprised this boy, because he's expressing his, you know, the most noblest attitude in him and doesn't seem to impress this teacher.
You know, if somebody would say that to Swami, "I want to lead my life for you," remember, Swami would clutch his hair and show, exactly, these many people have seen, right, telling like these dialogues. Let me see what happens after a few years.
I think this lecturer didn't do that because he had lost a lot of hair. But I think the attitude was the same, because even the teachers here have seen so many like that. But this, you know, lecturer gave a very important advice, which I think is very useful for the discussion we're doing here. He said, "It's very good, you know, the decisions you made is very good, but just make sure after a few years whether the decision was an emotional one or a very reasonable and thought, you know, comes after a lot of thought." Because, you know, many times what we say is important and not urgent may come out of our emotional moment, you know, that moment of excitement. And those are the things which tend to get drowned away when things which are urgent comes by.
Correct.
And then, you know, you lose sight of what you thought was your goal.
But I feel that is where our planning, you know, just planning up a day or planning up a schedule for oneself really helps. For example, I feel in Prashanti Nilayam, the time that we spend in Mandir, see, that is a very, very crucial time for us to think about what is important and what is not urgent. You know, as I feel personally, Swami has given us this beautiful, platform to think about what is important and not urgent, you know. So throughout the day, we are running behind assignments, seminars, presentations, you know, covering portions, etc., curriculum. But then this is the time when we come to Mandir and we sit, we look at Bhagwan's beautiful form, we visualize that. And then that's when, you know, it hits me, "Oh God, for what did I come here for?" You know, so I think in our everyday life, if we are able to, in our daily schedule, in our routine, the moments when we are praying, and that is why Swami in the 9-point code of conduct, he says that sitting together as a family and doing bhajans every day at home is a must. That is what he expects every Sai devotee to do. And I think it's more important from this perspective, because all day long we will be spending time in these other three quadrants. Okay, very conveniently leaving this one out. But then if we have some kind of a moment, you know, where we go stand in front of the altar of our house, okay, and just look at Bhagwan or look at our favorite deity over there and recollect what is important. What is important for me? You know, so I think this is a very
Beautiful example, but it is also a little specific to, the thing we said about assignments. It's all very student specific.
Yes.
And also the Mandir session, in a way, I feel that is the boon or benefit of being a student at Satyasai Institute of Higher Learning, where...
Or work over here.
Yeah, where there is a time that is set aside where everybody comes together and, you know, prays. Not many people in the world may have this luxury, actually, of getting like-minded people and having similar kind of schedules and timetables. Because nowadays, in a globalized world, there is no moment of the day when somebody or the other is not working.
True.
So it becomes so tough to get all that. So in such a general circumstance, where do we get the time for doing this? I mean, we found out that from things which are urgent have to be done urgently. And usually they don't take much time. So then it looks like if we want to get in more time for our important but not urgent quadrant, the only quadrant available to borrow time from is the not important, not urgent.
Not urgent, exactly. In fact, if you spend enough time in the important and not urgent, guess what will happen? Over a period of time, what was urgent and important will also start reducing. Because the second quadrant that we spoke about, the important and urgent. For example, I just give you an example of a student.
Hmm.
If I were to study every day during the study hours, which was important but not urgent.
Yeah, because the exams are months
exams
away.
Exams are months away. When exams finally come, nothing will be urgent for me.
Right.
Right. I'll be able to keep the same cool and calm and.
You know, I remember.
That urgent time will be only those 3 hours when you're supposed to be in the exam
hall.
Be
in the exam hall. Otherwise, today, you know what happens? I remember, this is what I still remember from my childhood. My father would never allow me to miss a bhajan session. You know, my board exams, whether it was my 10th standard board exams or my 12th standard board exams, are supposedly the most important exams of our life.
Mm.
Even during those times, he used to say, no, this 1 hour you can definitely give to Swami. The 23 hours that are there, you study, no problem. This 1 hour you don't give. And I used to, you know, think that, oh God, I had lined up the most important part of my exams for this 1 hour only, you know. We suddenly find that 1 hour of bhajans is like, you know, the most important. Only if I would have studied well throughout the semester.
Amma, you are mentioning about it in your place. We would have seen how many of us have ourselves been guilty of sometimes indulging in studies when Bhagwan was sitting and granting darshan outside in the Pulwant Hall.
Oh, yes.
Because, Swami, you know what? Day after also you will be coming for darshan. But, you know, let me, my exam will get over tomorrow. Then I will spend time looking at you.
And I tell you, I've got a really good experience of this, which taught me, you know, it absolutely to the core. Was once I took books to Mandir. In fact, I went late to Mandir. I am confessing this. Because the next day was management accounting exam. And I was not doing well at it. Obviously because I hadn't put in hard work rest of the semester. And so I said, today Swami, you know what? I won't sit in the front. I'll sit near the garage. You know, near the Krishna statue and where we drink
cooler water.
I sat over there. I just had Swami, a glance of Swami's darshan, and I went back over there and I'm busy mugging.
Mm-hmm.
And inside, you know, it is telling me, you know, you're doing the most stupid thing. You joined this institute to have darshan of Swami. You could have done this anywhere else outside. But yet, you know, I'm sitting over there, you know, kind of studying. I can never forget how badly I did in that test. After which I decided that come what may, I am not going to study during Mandir time.
And you know, just I'm not saying that this is how things happen always.
Yeah.
But one interesting thing that happened is, if you remember, you know, Brother Amay and me were classmates during our postgraduate. After that, you went on for MPhil, and when we joined MBA, we continued with doing this Mandir programs.
Yes.
And that was the time we prepared a program called Sevanjali,
mm-hmm.
and we wanted to put it up in front of Swami. Swami just didn't give permission. So that program got scuttled. 2 days were left for the examination to begin, and none of us would be doing this important but not urgent. Usually we leave it for the last minute. If not for the last minute, how many exams will get ruined? We study so much in the last minute. As Swami says, you know, swallowing and vomiting.
Exactly.
One day before the examination, Swami calls the Vice-Chancellor in for an interview. Anil Gokak sir was the Vice-Chancellor. And when Vice Chancellor sir comes out of the interview, he sends word for 2-3 of us from the class and the warden. Now, 2-3 of us were known for these cultural programs and putting up things in front of Swami, so we were called. And I remember the words of the Vice Chancellor sir. He said, "Tomorrow, if you don't put program in Swami's presence, a bomb will drop on me. Are you ready to put it up?" He asked, you know, in his typical that style. So, I just said, because this was Swami asking for a program, what is the need to think? I said, "Yes, sir, tomorrow we'll be ready, that Sevanjali will put it up." He said, "Okay." We had no idea, the two of us, who both of us had completed our masters in economics and in chemistry, and we had taken up MBA. No, we went back, we were like the old boys, because most of the other members of the class, MBA class, were, they had just joined for MBA. We went and told them, "You know what, Swami has blessed us to put up this program, finally." For many of them, it would be the first chance in Swami's presence. They said, "When?" I said, "Tomorrow." They said, "But we have got an examination." I said, "See, that's what it is, we have to do it." And it was 5-10 minutes of convincing, and you know, we had to relive some 2-3 experiences with Swami to show how Swami's grace is the ultimate. Mm-hmm. And everybody agreed, and we all did it. We all, you know, put up that program actually. Today evening is Sevanjali, and tomorrow early morning is the test. So we did the Sevanjali program. And you know, that test, like how you said, the opposite happened here. Everybody did well. And personally, I had one amazing experience. You know, as I was entering the class to write the test, somebody comes and asks me, "Hey, what is the answer for this question?" And he asked me a question which is like absolute Greek and Latin for me. I said, "I have no idea, what is this?" Then he said, "You also don't know." Then he asked somebody, then I hear, "Can you believe it? That is the second question in the examination paper there." And I said, "Thank you, Swami, for leaking this out, you know." It was a 4-mark question. That was just, I got to know the question 3 minutes before the exam, got to know the answer 1.5 minutes before the exam, and wrote it and got 3 out of 4 in the exam. So, you know, yes. Giving...
No, that's, I think that's when you say important, urgent, and the defining that important becomes very, very important in itself.
Exactly.
And when you look at it, at least for students, when you say, you know, when you speak to some of the very old students from old Vrindavan and all that, they would say that invariably throughout the year, they would be lost in Swami. They would, you know, some of them would describe that their entire day would be spent around that old bungalow of Swami.
Hmm.
And there was no idea of when is that exam coming and when is that, you know, when you're supposed to prepare. And that Swami would decide, you know, the day when they have to start studying, one fine day Swami would come and say, "You know what, guys, you have exam next week. You know, what are you fellows doing here? Go and study." So that, you know, that importance even for that exam or that urgency for that exam was given based on what was Swami's reaction to that time frame. You know, Swami would say, "And now it's time to study." And in fact, you know, Swami would go to the extent of saying, "Next week, exams are starting for the boys, so no more darshan for devotees. Devotees will have darshan and bhajans only on Thursdays and Sundays."
Really, I mean, that's the compassion. I remember still, even in Prashanjali, it used to happen oftentimes, right? When we used to have tests, Swami would give extended interviews. Because, you know, Swami would say, "No, if I go out now, you know, it will affect boys' studies." See, that is the compassion of God. Though, that is the most important thing in this universe. In the entire eon of time, God being on earth is the most... And even He gives a little examination of ours, a little academic examination of us, some importance. But that is, of course, that is
Swami. I mean, I feel that is the reason. Even if we are very, very, very selfish and self-centered, that is possibly the reason why we should give Swami the top importance. Because look at Him, having everything under His command, He's giving us importance. What else can we...
Absolutely.
If the, say, let us say, the Prime Minister of the nation or the President of the country comes to visit you and says, you know, all your job, everything is taken care, I'll ensure you get it. Will you say, "Just a minute, you know, I'm midway in reading this, come tomorrow and meet me after the test"? You won't do that for a Chief Minister, you won't do it for a Prime Minister, you won't do it for any minister. Imagine God. God is there waiting. So, there's no doubt that God is the most important, and as we rightly discovered, we should try to reduce time from the not urgent and not important, wasteful time, and try to plow more time into the things which are not urgent but very important. Because as you beautifully pointed out, Amai, that once we are able to give things which are important but not urgent sufficient time, then we can ensure that things which are important never become urgent in our life. That we'll have sufficient time, sufficient energy and sufficient resources to ensure that the important things are given their due importance and are completed perfectly. We will not have to hurry through important presentations, important goals in life. we need not turn 60 and then think, oh my God, you know, I have not moved an inch in the realms of the heart, in the realms of the soul. Now let me start learning the B of Bhagavad Gita. If you know, from childhood, the way Swami inculcates in us from Balvikas, if we are able to really inculcate that time, I think by the time we are 60, we will see no difference in living life or in dying and merging. I mean, we would be sort of Jivan Muktas.
Absolutely. I think, but then now the important thing that Prem you brought about was, how do we give that importance? How do we know what is important?
That I think is important, because it keeps evolving, right? What was important 5 years back is not important.
Exactly,
now.
Exactly.
I mean, I think if you take a 12-year-old boy or 13-year-old boy, the most important thing in his life would be to grow 6 feet tall.
You're talking of a 12-year-old boy. Take a 6-year-old boy. The most important thing for him would be to get that car with those shiny lights which goes fast around. Now, that would be the most important goal in his life.
Correct.
And if you take a smaller infant, the most important thing would be just to get mother's milk, possibly.
So I think, in a sense, we have to give space for this, what is important, to evolve with time.
Yes.
So even when we are doing this, you know, important, urgent, not urgent, you also keep in mind that this idea of what is the ultimate goal or what is that which is important and not urgent, that is actually evolving, and you give space for that evolution.
Yeah, so if I can just define importance, what do we give importance is actually what gives us happiness.
Hmm.
Right? I mean, very simply put, the most important for me at this moment will be what gives me maximum happiness, or
what you think will give you maximum happiness,
yeah,
at that point.
Exactly. Or that's what, if I can use an economics term, what gives me maximum utility. This gives me, for example, when I'm going to choose between water and Sprite, let us say for example, what gives me maximum utility is what makes me more happy, and therefore what is important for me. Right? If I can put it that way. So there is a very nice, just to sum up, importance is equal to happiness. What gives me more happiness is more important for me.
Yeah, this is what Swami says also, you know. He says that, why does man pursue wealth? Because he thinks wealth will give happiness.
Exactly.
Why does he pursue relationships? Because he thinks it will give happiness. Why does he pursue power? Because he thinks it will give happiness.
Yes.
I mean, simply, if it is happiness that you are seeking, why do you seek things which you think will give happiness? Why not seek happiness directly? For happiness is union with God. That is what...
Exactly. And of course, we can just go into a little bit of a little detour over here to know that this world cannot give me happiness. Of course, we can evolve after some time. Because as you know, often Swami used to say, you know, you think Mercedes car or BMW car gives a lot of happiness? Yeah, you know. Yeah, it obviously gives, yeah. Yes, Swami. Yeah, it's a beautiful car. He says, then why do we have to buy it? Why don't you just go and stand all day in front of a Mercedes showroom and look at the Mercedes Benz and be happy about it?
I mean, even if you possess a BMW car, it's not going to be in your sight always. So even the idea that there is a BMW car somewhere.
Exactly.
That
and then Swami goes a step ahead and says, imagine if that Mercedes car is now placed in your neighbor's garage. Forget giving happiness, it actually gives you displeasure, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're angry and you're jealous and you're having hatred,
yes.
Right? So if you ever thought that happiness was lying in a particular object, it was not. It was about what your relationship with that object was giving you. So that means actually happiness was within us. So of course, that is to take it a little detour. Coming back to this importance happiness thing, there's one very interesting equation, if I may say so, which is given by one Professor Martin Seligman, who is currently the president of the American Psychological Society. He actually gives a very beautiful definition of what happiness is.
Amay, before we go into Michael Seligman's definition of happiness, I think we shall all mull over what we have discussed till now, also allow the readers a little break.
Sure.
I mean the listeners a little break, and we'll return back. So, dear listeners, we'll be back in a few minutes. This is going to be an amazing part of the satsang. Don't go away too far. Be back in a few minutes after this little break.
Bacha
पताशली का केला दो दिन का जग में वेला सब चला चली का खेला कोई चला गया कोई जावे कोई गठरी बांध सिधावे कोई चला गया कोई जावे कोई गठरी बांध सिधावे कोई खड़ा तैयार अकेला रे कोई खड़ा तैयार अकेला चला चली का खेला रे खेला रे खेला रे दो दिन का जग सब चला चली का खेला दो दिन का जग में मेला सब चला चली का खेला मात पिता सुत नारी भाई अंत सहायक नाही मात पिता सुत नारी भाई अंत सहायक नाही फिर क्यों भरता पाप का ठेला रे फिर क्यों भरता पाप का ठेला चला चली का खेला रे खेला रे खेला रे दो दिन का जग में मेला सब चला चली का खेला दो दिन का जग में मेला सब चला चली का खेला
वेलकम बैक डियर लिसनर्स वी आर इन द मिडल ऑफ अ वेरी इंटरेस्टिंग डिस्कशन वी होप सो वी होप यू आर एंजॉयिंग इट एज मच एज वी आर होपिंग वी आर एंजॉयिंग इट So, Amai, we came to that point where, you know, it's I think even I've heard that talk on TED Talks by Martin Seligman. A very beautiful concept because, you know, a thing which is a logical understanding of what we spoke. We said happiness equal to important. What gives us happiness? We go after it. And so, invariably, we would look for things which would give you instant happiness.
Absolutely.
And
especially in this day and age.
Right, and we always do this mistake of mixing happiness with pleasure. That again, Swami would say, pain and pleasure is different from the happiness or ananda which Swami speaks of. So why not keep doing things which is going to give you pleasure?
And
I think that's what we all try to do most of the time. But what Martin Seligman says actually squashes that idea. And I think you should tell us about that.
Yeah, so what he very beautifully says that he says, happiness is a function of three things. He says, first of all, it's a function of pleasure. The most basest kind of happiness, he says, is pleasure, in fact. So he says, in that also you can say that in pleasure also, the lowest level pleasure would be eating great food. You know, you pop in a motichur laddu or one gulab jamun from North Indian canteen. I think they're the best gulab jamun makers in the world.
A burger.
A burger from McDonald's.
Trying to be global.
Pizza. A pizza, yes. And that gives you tremendous amount of happiness. You cannot refute that gives you good happiness, right? Mm. So from that basis level happiness of eating great food, probably the highest kind of pleasure you get is listening to a great musical concert. Let us say by Yani or by A.R. Rahman.
Or a recording of Bach.
Exactly. Yeah. Mozart or anybody. Great music gives you, that is also happiness which you cannot refute. But he says the issue with that kind of a thing is it is extremely short-lasting.
Short-lived, huh?
Short-lived. You know, for example, you eat a great gulab jamun or you have a fantastic banquet, a four-course meal. 6 hours later, guess what? You start feeling hungry again. Or 10 hours later, that meal satisfies you, however good the meal may be, can satisfy you only for that much amount of time. After that, again you are running behind it. Right?
And even memories of the previous meal will only make you feel more miserable.
When you're hungry, right?
Exactly. Probably, you know, listening to a great musical concert can keep you happy for 3-4 days. But, you know, a week later, when you want to get some happiness, you can't go back and think about, you know, that the concert that you heard and get the same amount of...
You plug in again and listen to the same music.
Exactly. You need it again and again and again. That's the problem with this pleasure. Okay, that it gives you. So he says, typically what happens is when you are small, when you are young, when you are a little child, you are actually looking because you don't know what is higher than that. So you keep running behind. So you have one toy, right? And then that you play with that toy for a week and then you get bored of that toy. So you're looking forward to the next toy. And it keeps moving along like
that. You know, interestingly, the way you mentioned it, it almost looks like an evolution. You said that possibly the basest among these pleasures is eating. And if you see, an infant does exactly that.
Yeah.
Just eating.
And sleeping.
Eating and sleeping. Anything else, it is crying. Okay, just eating, sleeping. If it wants to eat, it cries. If it wants to sleep, it cries. As the child grows a little bit, then starts getting, you know, attached to maybe playing blocks and
exactly.
Other things. And once crosses 5 years or 6 years of age, there's a distinction made. You know, these are cheap playing blocks, but this is a video game which is more interesting. So there is some kind of value.
I think,
even
the beauty of that is, you know, when you're a child, you go by the form. You know, some toys in this form, it's something new. The same toys in another form, that's something new. But I think with age, you're able to see that, you know, this is the same thing in a different package.
All dolls are same. All teddies are same.
Right. You know, your ability to say that this is giving the same pleasure, but it's just giving it in a different form.
I think that's a very deep thought. In the sense, I don't think a lot of even very, very elderly people understand that. I mean, all of us, for example, you know, as Mr. Rangarajan, Mr. T.T. Rangarajan, a good speaker,
right.
He often says, all our life we cry. When I was small, I cried for a 60 rupee car. When I'm big, I'm crying for a 60 lakh rupee car. You know, when I was small, I cried for a little helicopter or a toy car. Now I'm crying for an Audi car or a BMW. You know, it's the same. It's the crying is this constant.
Right.
So in fact, to understand that, you know, in fact, I'm just running behind a bigger version of the same old thing. That itself is a pretty big, I think, jump, you know, to understand.
Right.
So moving on from pleasure. So that, he says, is the first thing, short-lived. Eventually, we move on to the second element of...
Though it is short-lived, it gives joy instantly.
Yes, yes. It does. It does give. That's the point.
Yeah, and that's pleasure. So he calls it pleasure. And in fact, that is what is in Sanskrit is called prayas. The the two parts. One is of the shreyas and one is of the prayas. The prayas is pleasant. It gives instant pleasure. And in fact, it attracts us there. Because it is instant. Eventually, he calls the second element of happiness as engagement. Engagement is all our work. You know, all the thing that pulls
engages.
Us, which pulls us, you know, for example, a scientist, his work in the laboratory. Office going person, his office, right? An author's book. And in fact, that is where we spend maximum amount of our lives, right, in engagement. And in fact, he makes a very interesting point. He says, sometimes you have to even give up pleasure and take up engagement.
Oh, ask any office goer in the modern world.
No, actually, he gives a very beautiful example of a friend of his who is, I think, a writer. You know, who has typically in American style, he says he has a social life which sucks. You know, he doesn't have friends, he doesn't go out and have special dinners, he doesn't go to the movies. But is he an unhappy man? He says, no, he's a very happy man because he loves the work he does. When he's sitting and writing his book and when he has nobody around him, he's so lost in that work that he's the happiest then. That's why he says that engagement gives happiness which is much higher than what pleasure can give you.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is the kind of, you know, happiness that we get and which stays with us for a very, very long time. All our achievements as a singer, as a sportsman, as, you know, being the best lawyer or, you know, anything gives you maximum amount of happiness. That is what you think.
Actually, the way you said, if you take, for example, when you said sportsman, it triggered. If you think of a sportsman, say, who is training for either judo or karate or cricket or soccer or anything, actually, in order to, you know, hit a goal or score runs or do whatever in their sport, they are undergoing pain, which is opposite of pleasure.
Very true.
Instead of, because on the field, it will be more pleasurable not to chase behind the ball for 200 meters, only not to get the ball. It just makes you pant and gasp. But you do that. You are ready to undergo opposite of pleasure for the sake of getting fulfillment in engagement.
I still remember at this point of time, Mr. Tambakos, who's a world champion,
right.
And Bhagwan's devotee, a very, very ardent devotee of Bhagwan.
In fact, I think he's the one who presented that torch, right?
Yes.
The special
Athens Olympic torch.
Which is now housed in the museum at Prashanthinilaya.
Absolutely. And in fact, you will not believe if I say, he came and offered his Olympic gold medal to Bhagwan.
Right.
You know, and they wanted to keep it in Chaitanya Jyoti, but then for some reason it was not. So he was mentioning that the last thing he did, that is the Athens Olympics was happening in June and July, and from December onwards, he said he completely cut away from the world. Okay, he gave up his most favorite food and he got into this really, really strict regime. Okay, in pursuit of that Olympic gold medal. And he said in this entire 6 months that, you know, right up to the day of his winning the gold medal, he said he was allowed to meet only three people. Mm-hmm. Three people other than his team of gymnasts. Because they said that any other thing will be a distraction and there should be zero distraction during, training period. So you can imagine the amount of pleasure that he must have given up. You know, maybe sleep or, you know, maybe his
no
food.
No good food, no social friends. Life, no TV, no.
Yes. And in fact, the last thing he did before getting into that, you know, into that zone was he had darshan of Bhagwan. He came to Parthi, he had Swami's darshan, he went back and he said the only three people whom he was in touch with were all Sai devotees and who kept telling him only Swami stories, because he says that is the most amazing thing, you know, that, you know, kept going. And he said, if you notice as I'm standing on the Roman rings and I'm doing my entire exercise on that Roman rings.
Yeah, he had done a hand split. And he was suspended like a perfect cross.
Yes.
On the Roman rings.
In fact, it is named after him. That particular move is named after Mr. Tambakos.
Mm.
Is it? Wow.
Yeah. And he was saying that you'll notice that I'm murmuring something. And it was in fact Om Sai Ram, Om Sai Ram, Om Sai Ram that he was doing standing on the Roman rings, you know. It is so beautiful just to hear this. And he said the night before he had made it to the finals, he was pitted, he was the favorite to win the gold medal. And his only prayer on the eve of the, you know, the final event was, Swami, thank you for giving me this opportunity to think about you for the last 6 months. It was not about probably the most coveted, you know, Olympic medal, but it was about this. So, you know, why I was saying this?
When you mentioned this incident, you had said that there's pleasure and the next level there's engagement. And I conclude that possibly there's a third level. I'm just feeling that what Tambakos did possibly moves on to the third level, because it seemed like the most phenomenal way of doing anything. I mean,
exactly.
It doesn't look like the engagement, the kind you and me would do in our offices. I mean, it is something phenomenal.
Yes. Yeah, probably I've already jumped off into the last part.
Okay.
Maybe I'll come back to this part. Seeing every athlete, right? Every athlete who is moving towards that, we have seen, for example, my favorite example of Mr. Sachin Tendulkar. Even after hitting 100, the Indian cricketer, after hitting 100 centuries, when you ask him which is his best century, he says the one in Perth, which was his second century. You know, he says he still feels that was the time when he felt absolutely, you know, one.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that he gave up, I mean, all these people these examples that we are taking, and the ones even in our own lives, probably we ourselves, give up a lot of pleasure and get ourselves engaged. And that gives us a kick in life, gives us a lot of happiness.
Just coming to the two points that we have covered till now, defining them. So the first is pleasure. It is
short-lived.
Instantly it gives joy, but it is short-lived. Next comes engagement. The fulfillment, satisfaction and joy from that is relatively long-lived, but it doesn't come as instantly as pleasure, and possibly you'll have to give up a lot of pleasure in order to attain engagement, right?
Yes. Yes.
Actually, this is a very interesting definition which he's given, because very often we say we are giving up the pleasure of the moment for the pleasure of the future. But in fact, what he was saying is there is pleasure in this giving up itself. There is
exactly.
Pleasure in this engagement itself, which we are not acknowledging and realizing.
Yes.
You know, the athlete who's giving up, you know, a fun time with his friends to do it, it is not that after he's done with it, he'll go back to that fun time, because he's having that fun time in that engagement itself.
In other words, if Mr. Tambakos had not won the gold medal, he wouldn't have been any sadder person, because the entire 6 months was an experience in itself.
Right.
If Sachin Tendulkar had not scored that century and
exactly,
had got out,
you know,
on 80.
That's really a point, you know, which even Sachin Tendulkar or somebody like Rahul Dravid often say. They would say that there are days when they go out and they don't make the best score, but they know that they have played the best. Because they know that, you know, from the practice I've done, from what I wanted to do, whether I went out and did that. And, you know,
yes.
It's...
And the reason why we are giving a lot of sports example is because those examples are in front of us. We have seen that.
Right.
But I'm sure there are moments in each one of our lives, you know, when you go and you probably write a particular article, or you go and do your work, And you know from inside, your boss may not come and tell you that you have done a great work, but you just know that you have done a great work. That is the amount of happiness that engagement
gives. I feel the same about, you know, Amay teaches, for example, the same subject year after year. But I am sure there are days when he has felt superb, when days he has not felt so good.
Absolutely.
No difference in the subject that he is teaching. It's absolutely about what you feel. It's not, means the,
very true.
As far as the students are concerned, it might be the same, content that he's teaching.
I think one thing which all of us may be in the same wavelength of is when you go and give a talk to somebody, you know,
yes.
Not every time you will get the same response from the audience, but sometimes you feel that, you know, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and those moments you feel, I don't care about what the audience said because this was entirely selfish. The joy I'm deriving just out of doing this is so great. I don't care also if...
Yes.
So that time, you know, you take the joy completely away from the response to the event or the result of that act because that's the time when you got that maximum engagement, as
correct.
To put it in...
But then, you know, the way we have described it, is this the end all and be all? Is engagement the ultimate? Mr. Seligman says that there is one level even higher than that.
Mm.
And that is what he terms as meaning. Finding meaning in your life is what gives you the ultimate happiness. Let me just give you an example over here. It's a very famous example. A great lawyer, a very successful young lawyer, goes overseas, makes a big name for himself, wins several different lawsuits,
cases.
Extremely successful. One day he's got a lovely wife, he's got three children. One day he's traveling in the first class compartment. He's
of a train.
Yeah, of a train. He's brown in color because he belongs to India. A white man, so-called white man, the ticket collector comes there, says, brown people not allowed. So he says, I'm having a ticket for it.
In the first class compartment.
Yeah, in the first class ticket, he says, you're not allowed to be over here. He gets thrown out of the, and we of course by now know who we are talking about, is Mohandas Karamchand Gandhi.
Mahatma Gandhi.
Yes, and he gets thrown out of the first class compartment, comes back to India, goes on to become a Mahatma. Okay, and today revered, by the world as probably, like Albert Einstein said, in the generations to come.
To come will scarcely believe that a man like this ever walked the earth in flesh and blood.
Yeah. What was missing in his life? He was a successful barrister. He was a successful family man. He had a lovely wife and three children. And everything was going well.
And given by the image of lawyers we have, they do have a lot of engagement when they are in the middle of a suit, you know.
Exactly.
They really are at it when they're arguing or something.
And if you take a more modern example, Bill Gates. I mean, what will Bill Gates ever lack? In fact, they say if Bill Gates drops a $10 note, it's better that he doesn't bend down to pick it up because the amount of worth that he has in that time is much more than $10.
Yeah, in fact, Arvind, just to correct you here, it's $100.
Oh.
It seems he earns $150 every second. If you were to see the amount, so if he drops a $100 bill, he'll take about 2 seconds to bend and pick it up. He need not do that because in that much time he would have already earned $300.
Okay, so yeah, that is what I was trying to say. But such a man, you know, what is actually giving him joy? Not his money, not his fortune, not being on top of the world for a decade now, almost. It is going and helping out children afflicted with malaria and there was one more.
Rotavirus.
Rotavirus, yes. These kind of things that many people have not even heard of. He's finding joy and greatest fulfillment in life doing that, and possibly that is what Seligman refers to as finding meaning in life.
Absolutely. In fact, at this point, I would urge you, if you have not heard his speech, his commencement address to the Harvard. It's something that is, very well watched on YouTube. But you must see that. In that, he makes amazing statements, and that too coming from someone like Bill Gates, where he says that. He is urging all the graduates of that particular batch. He's saying that, you know what, I did not have something that you had. And what is that, he says? He says, it's not about opportunity, but it's about the knowledge of the global inequities which we are surrounded with. He says, when I passed out, I did not know about the inequities in the world. But you cannot say that you do not know about them. And he urges all the graduates to do something for the benefit of the world. You know, here is a man who was considered to be one of the most cutthroat businessmen in the world. He had several lawsuits against him on basis, on the basis of antitrust
monopoly and practices.
Here is a man who now is saying that go serve the society, be of some use to the society. You know, he found that meaning in life probably.
Yeah, that's the contrast. You know, very often I think Bill Gates himself talks about it. He would often look at somebody like Warren Buffett. You know, he would say, "What is driving this man?" Because in worth, Warren Buffett would have actually been much richer than Bill Gates. But here was a man who was driving his 1970s car, who was living in the same house he lived all through his life, living a very, very simple life, and he found that Warren Buffett was the happiest man he ever found. And he says that one of the things which triggered him to find that meaning was the way he saw Warren Buffett living, because he was equally a rich man.
He's the second richest man in the world.
But leading a life which was more full.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think that's what brings us to that third point of Seligman. You know, you might have, and we have heard descriptions of the house which Bill Gates lived in. You know, if you think of pleasure is what is going to give you happiness, he had it all. And then the engagement, and you know, the thrill which a successful businessman would get.
A successful businessman, coding genius.
Right.
In every sense, intellectually and in terms of business.
Wonderful family.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's married for 25 years, which is a great achievement in America. Right? I mean,
and probably one thing which maybe Seligman misses out is recognition. You know, there is an amount of happiness which comes with recognition, and you know, the people of your category, the peers coming and recognizing your effort. I think that was also a part of what he had already achieved.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes,
but we see that just like people are ready to give up pleasure in order to attain engagement, in order to find meaning in life, people give up things that engages them. That's what happened in Mahatma Gandhi's case.
That's what happened in Bill Gates' case.
Yes, totally gave up what was their core competency and what they were popular and famous around the world for. I mean, that is what they gave up in order to achieve meaning. So therefore, the thing builds up even more now. Meaning in life is something that takes a very long time to achieve, but the satisfaction and joy it gives is almost permanent. It is much, much, much more compared to what you can get from pleasure and much more compared to what you can get from engagement.
And probably in a sense, just striving for that meaning in life itself gives you happiness. There's no possible destination for it. There's no particular destination where I'm going to reach. For example, if I'm saying that PhD is going to give me happiness, there is a moment when I will get my PhD and that's it. After that, what? But I think meaning is something which you will strive for all your life. You may or may not get it, but you know that the amount of happiness that you're getting from it is fulfilling, is entire, it's complete.
I remember a quote from Richard Bach's book. He says, here's a secret to know if you have completed the purpose of your life. If you are alive, it isn't.
Now, given these three things, you know, pleasure, engagement, and meaning, I think one could directly guess that the person who will be most happy would be who gets all these three things. You know, if somebody could do something which gives them pleasure, involves them and gives them that engagement, and also has meaning, I think that's when
all the three in one activity.
I think that's when they would lead actually a fulfilled life.
I think the standing example for us is Bhagwan.
Absolutely.
You know, he would do everything, and in fact, doing everything with Swami would actually give us all the three.
And it will give meaning.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything becomes meaningful when it is done for God.
I mean, even something like eating food, you know. I mean, he will convert even a pleasurable thing into a meaningful thing. Right? He'll be giving you the best of dishes. Okay, so that is a pleasurable thing. And then he'll make you get engaged in it. Okay, that is your process of eating. And then he'll just pop in one statement over there which will give meaning also to that food.
Brahmarpanam. Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva. Praninam Dehamachrita. And you know, once you listen to Swami expounding on Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva, you feel that what the Buddha got under the Bodhisattva tree there, you are getting in front of a banquet. That is amazing.
Yes, yes.
You know, I was speaking about Swami's discourse. I remember a discourse that Swami delivered in Trai, Vrindavan, and I think this video is available on YouTube possibly.
Mm-hmm.
A very beautiful video where Swami talks to the boys on how they must spend time each day. How they must divide their time. You know, Swami says, every day there are three kinds. Every day should be divided into three parts.
Mm-hmm.
See, the first part is the, he says, tamasic time. Swami says tamasic time. And tamasic time is a sloth time. Usually tamasic is translated as sloth. He says it extends from 8 p.m. to 4 a.m. This is tamasic time. Mm-hmm. Then Swami says there is a rajasic time. And rajasic time, you know, rajasic translates into intense activity.
Activity.
So he says rajasic time is from 4 a.m.
to 8 a.m.
From 8 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Right.
Yes,
so
you're right.
So 8 p.m. to 4 a.m. is tamasic. 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. is rajasic. Rajasic meaning intense activity. Then Swami says there's a sattvic time. Sattvic time is, sattvic is considered as the virtuous, the most beautiful, the most subtle. And Swami says sattvic time is divided into two halves. One half is from 4 a.m. to 8 a.m. Second half is from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. And so Swami says that during the tamasic time, do sloth activities. You know, the basal activities. Eating, sleeping, your enjoyment, whatever. Then your hard work, your effort, rajasic time, do it. And that is how we see the institute or the school or the student schedule. Between 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. is the university time when you go and teach or you go and study. That's our working hours also, more or less, at Radio Sai or at any place. And in the sattvic time, dedicated to prayer, sattvic activities, 4 a.m. to 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. And I feel this and seligments we can combine to get a beautiful, result. Spend the tamasic time for pleasurable activities. Watch your movies, play your games, whatever you want to do. You know, I mean video games or whatever, and sleep and eat. Enjoy feasting, everything. Finish it off between 8 p.m. and 4 a.m. And the rajasic time, which is 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., spend on engagement activities. Things that will, give you career, joy, studies, all that. And the Brahma Muhurtam time, the most sacred sattvic time, 4 a.m. to 8 a.m., 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., spend it for
meaningful
activities through which you seek meaning in life. I think this is a beautiful way to divide our day.
And in fact, in some way, Swami has already done that in Prashanthi Nilayam,
right.
For all the students.
You know,
it was something which we did not even know.
One of my classmates, they went and met Mr. Raja Reddy, you know, who had spent many years with Swami, who was personal attendant of Swami for many years. You know, this would be Raja Reddy's general way of starting a conversation. He would ask the students, what time do you wake up in the morning? So this boy, you know, he thought of it and he said, sir, I usually wake up at 6 o'clock. He said, you wake up at 6 o'clock? You're losing half your day. He said, half of your day is gone if you wake up at 6 or 6.30. He said, you have to wake up at 3 and by 4 you should be bright. By 4 your mind should be absolutely clear.
If that is true, then every day I lose half day, Prem.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, this is exactly what you were saying. Because the most important part of the day is that 4 to 8. And if you lose 2 hours or 3 hours in that, it is equal to losing half of that day. And he said, that is what most of us do. The most meaningful part of the day we are losing, you know, coming, using the definition and the explanation that you gave.
We are doing pleasurable things when we are supposed to be doing meaningful things.
Right.
And meaningful things get cancelled. No, the thing is, Amma, the problem is we are doing pleasurable things when we are supposed to do meaningful things. We are doing pleasurable things when we are supposed to do engagement things. And we are doing pleasurable things when we are supposed to do pleasurable things. We are leading lives like infants and babies.
In fact, we are very close to animals.
Yes.
Which again, we said right at the beginning that, you know, we are
everything humans. Is, for an animal, there's nothing like engagement and meaning. I don't think a hyena thinks, what is the purpose of my life? Nor does it try to find some engagement. It just wants to find meat to scavenge. That's all its goal is all about.
Yes.
So, the...
I think in one of these talks, maybe by Seligman only, he gives another beautiful example. You know, he says, there's this psychology professor who takes his class of students. One fine day he just says that today we're not going to have any class, we're going to go on a field trip. So he just takes them to the best restaurant in the town and he says, you all can enjoy, the bill is on me. So they all go and have a ball, you know, they all have nice food and they enjoy themselves. Basically it's a bunch of friends who have a very good time. So they come back. After a couple of weeks he again says that today no classes, we're going to go on a field trip. So he takes them to a school for special children, which is nearby in the town. And he says that we're just going to go and spend some time with these children. The same amount of time which they spent in that restaurant a couple of weeks back, he makes them spend in this place, which is a school for special children. Then he comes back, and after about 3 or 4 weeks, he pulls up the class and he takes a survey. He says, how many of you remember how much fun you had on the day when we went out for a lunch? He said, many of them remembered it. And he said, how many of you remember the day when we went out and spent the time with special children? He said, most of them remembered it. So he says, that which gives you pleasure will give you pleasure, but it does not last. But that which engages you, and there is a sense of meaning in it, you know, that which gives you a sense of fulfillment is something which will carry for, you know, ever.
You know, Prem, we have to now move ahead, because this is fantastic in theory. Okay, so yes, even I want to spend all my time as much as possible in finding meaning in life. But see, Bill Gates can afford to do it. He can afford to go to malaria infected people, and this is, you know, in that way, it almost seems as if after you fulfill all your basal needs, then you can start engaging in meaning in life. Is it true that I have to wait till I fulfill all my, you know, food, clothing, shelter, social security, all these needs, and then start finding a meaning in life? Or is it possible that even as I carry out my day-to-day activities, I try to find meaning in life and be happy?
Yeah, in fact, I would like to answer this question in two ways.
Mm-hmm.
One is, I think that is where, if you look at the traditions across the world, the kind of examples given to us are always people who started early. Even Swami used to say, start early, drive slowly, reach safely. If you look at the heroes of the Upanishads, for example, or the heroes of our Indian tradition, you have people like Dhruva, the little boy, the 6-year-old boy who went into penance. You have the example of Shvetaketu. You have the example of Prahlada. You have the example of Nachiketa. And I feel in many ways, if you look at the world masters, for example, you look at Jesus Christ, by 32, he had finished. His mission of his life was over. I am 34. I feel, you know, like, that's it. I mean, I've already gone past Jesus, and what have I done? You know, oftentimes this
Swami
comes.
Swami Vivekananda,
Adi Shankaracharya.
By the way, I was having the similar thought. I was thinking, I am 32 now. Swami started Sanatana Sarathi by the time he was 32. He had, you know, the world had physically matured to accept him as the eternal charioteer.
Absolutely. So, if you look at, you know, so one thing is definitely there is no later time. It's now, it's never too late though, but it is right now. Because if you see the kind of examples given. And the second one, coming to the more brass tacks, is what we wanted to do as a last part of our satsang, and that is look at how we can actually achieve this goal right with whatever we are doing. So, let me just give you a simple case over here. I'll give
so
you four cases.
Why don't you give it your own personal example?
Sure. So, here is a teacher, very rude, regularly misses classes, does not come prepared to class, does not listen to the grievance of students, very biased and very vindictive.
Hey, I told personal example. I don't think this is you. Not at all you, am I?
Yes. So just imagine that there is an example like this in front of us. There is a teacher. Haven't we come across people like this?
Okay. You know, the eighth point in code of conduct says do not speak ill of others. But as a general thing, I think we have met teachers who teach. I don't know. Sometimes they don't even teach, but they're nasty also.
Okay, let me give you another example. A simple one. Let's take a bus conductor. A disgruntled bus conductor always cribs for issuing change. Shouts at passengers, always in a hurry to move from the stop, explodes at the slightest provocation, no smile on his face.
Yes.
You have definitely come across.
Definitely you must have come
across. What is wrong with these people?
I mean, you know that this conductor whom you spoke about, he's not doing his job. His job is to give ticket. He's shouting. Yes, he might be irritated, but he can't bring that to his work. He better do his job of issuing tickets.
Exactly. What do you think is the cause for this? I mean, why do you think that he's he's behaving the way he is behaving?
Because if you say India, you are in a government job, your job is guaranteed possibly. I'm just assuming. So, it doesn't matter whether I do my job nicely or not, I'm going to get my salary. It's not tied to my performance. So, why bother to give performance? And, you know, this is often the complaint that till the recent government came into place, where things have seemed to be improving, this used to be the general complaint with all government offices, that they have got a fixed salary, they have got everything assured, it doesn't depend on their performance.
Yeah, in fact,
I think one could also be that person is not looking for happiness in what he's doing.
Yes.
In a sense, you know, my happiness is at my home with my family, and this is something which I have to just labor through.
Exactly.
You know, in a sense, that also could be...
Yeah, that is the thing, Prem. But the thing is, I need not even labor through. That is the, yeah, exactly. I think, the wrong attitude. Why should I labor through also? Anyway...
Why should I take the trouble of being
because
good?
If you feel that for the sake of the family, I have to labor through, and you labor through, it's okay. You don't even do your job properly, and just because you know you are assured of a salary.
Exactly. So, if I can just sum up our little discussion, it was basically, as Swami puts it, you know, he uses two often quoted words, swartham and swaprayojanam. Self-interest and selfishness. That is the basis. So what, even if, exactly. Why should I be good?
The best example would be the same bus conductor. Let's say one of his superior gets into the bus. Wouldn't his behavior completely change?
Correct.
That is because of swartham and swapriyojanam.
Yeah, because it will benefit him now.
It benefits him.
Yes.
Or it would harm him the other way around.
Exactly. So what we can call this entirely, or this part of the thing, as ordinary karma or ordinary action. Okay, what he is doing is based, you know, it is rooted in swartham and swaprayojanam. Okay, and these kind of people, we see them often, and we don't want to be these kind of people. Right? We want to go to the next level. What is the next level? Yoga karmasu kaushalam. That is, do your action to the best of your ability, or excellence in action. Okay, achieving the best that you possibly can. So let's look at the same two things. Just before that, you know, Swami says, this kind of duty, just doing duty without any love, Swami says, is deplorable. Duty without love is deplorable. The next level is excellence in action. The same two, let's take this, the same case of a teacher. Very good in her or his subject, teaches well in the class, loves everyone, is impartial. Despite of this, her colleague gets the best teacher award in the campus. Filled with anger, she attempts to plot against her colleague to defame her.
Oh.
Okay. What's the problem here? Let's look at the bus conductor's one. Committed to his work, talks to his all the people with a smile. Always courteous and tenders exact change. Does not get a raise in his salary. Gets frustrated and plots a strike against the...
You know, when you said the first case, it felt like some disgruntled employee in the government organization. This feels like a bad disgruntled employee in a private organization. Because now your rewards are tied to your performance. You definitely perform well and you do well. But yes, it so often happens. You are expecting a promotion, you don't get it. Or you possibly get it, but not to the extent, or the raise is not to the level at which you expected and you felt you have worked it. So, while the first one seemed like a government office scenario, this seems like the scenario in most of the private offices.
Absolutely.
Where you do
and
your job.
And it is also because of, you know, kind of what you think is important. Like, suppose I am doing this work. See, I do it in a certain way because I think this is the way it has to be done. So, when I don't get recognition, it is like, you know, what I feel is important is not being recognized by others. So, it is still, in a sense, swartham. Might not be swaprayojanam in the sense of selfishness, but you give importance to...
This is definitely self-interest.
Right. I mean, you know, the way you look at it. You want the world to look at it the way you look at it.
Yeah. So the problem over here is, the good part about this guy, or both these people, the teacher and the bus conductor, they're doing a great job.
Yes.
And so congratulations for them. It's just that somewhere along the way, they're seeing that they're not getting noticed, or they're not getting recognition for it, and that is what is fizzling them out.
They're not getting recognition to the extent they think that they deserve.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, as I said, you may possibly get a raise, but you expect a 10,000 raise and you get a 4,000 raise and you feel it's unfair.
Exactly.
And it makes it even more bitter, like as you said, if you see the other teacher go ahead and get
exactly.
promoted.
In a sense, you could say the first one is a bad person, bad employee. The other one maybe might not be the best person, but he's still a good employee. He's a good person to have in an organization.
But again, that's not the best place to be, isn't it?
Right.
We wouldn't like to be over there.
No.
So what is the next level? So Swami takes it one level higher. And so now this is the
actually,
stage
you know, this I feel is the stage most of us are in. You know, I will be a good employee. I will serve well as long as it's a win-win. If I feel that I am doing my bit for the organization, but in return I'm getting nothing from the organization, or I'm getting far less than what I'm giving, I lose interest. I feel this is most commonly where most of us are. And sadly, you know, you're saying there are two more stages above. I don't know, we'll discuss that. But it feels like this is the ultimate state. for the rest of the world. You know, nobody says that we should be a bad employee. Yes, we are put to task if we don't do our job well. But we all feel if we do our job well, what we expect, you have to give that much. If it's not given, it's unfair. It's an unfair world. That is why there is so much of unrest in the world. Because I feel all of us mostly are in this stage.
Yeah, and the problem with this stage is, because it's a pyramid, you know, because the people at the top are very few, that means all of us cannot possibly reach that. Right? We will never, all the teachers in the institution cannot get the Best Teachers Award. Maybe in the same year, though, definitely they cannot get Best Teacher Award. Which means there will always be some disgruntled employees. Whether it's my college, whether it's my organization, whether it's my... So which means that only the top 10% or the top, you know, little percent are going to be the happy lot. And the rest of the world, if I can, you know, project it to the entire world, is going to be a disgruntled lot. Which means the world is not going to be a happy place to live in.
Which right. means, you're saying that I should work... Like, I want to win the Best Teacher Award, but I should not feel anything if I don't get that.
Ha! That's where we are coming to the third. That is where Swami takes us. That means, from excellence in action now, we are going to the third level, which is Nishkama Karma, which is selfless action. Irrespective of whether I get recognized or not, I continue to do to the best of my ability. Sounds okay? So let's look at the same two people whom we were talking about.
It just looks like having the second stage with an insurance policy. It's that if you get rewarded, you get joy, but if you don't get rewarded, fine, because you never expected it.
Yeah, that is like a bonus. It's like the cherry on the cake.
It's just like for an insurance policy, you have to pay some premium. It's like we pay the premium of having that desire. We just give up that desire.
Yes.
But in a sense, you know, probably you could say the second category we spoke about was a sincere person. But the third category is a good person. You know, by nature, his nature is to be good. You know, let's say the conductor. His nature is to be pleasing to whoever comes and speaks to him. So he is going to be that way wherever he is, whether he is recognized or not. So one is a sincere person, but the other one we are talking about is a good person.
Prem, I would like to say that you can probably even build this nature into yourself by practicing it all the time of not expecting. You know, how many times it used to happen in Prashantina, isn't it?
Right.
We would do our best. We would expect that Swami would come and, you know, give me a Pad Namaskar. It does not happen. And I say, okay, Swami, but I know you are happy with me. So, right, Swami tried to build it into us that don't always expect a Pad Namaskar. Don't always expect that I'll come and, you know, put Akshata on your head on your birthday. And yet, you know...
And I feel the beauty of Swami is he would train us for this by doing the opposite also. How many times have we simply received without... having been deserving of that.
Exactly.
For no reason we are made special and we feel, okay, fine, Swami's grace. But when for no reason when we are not made special, we don't think, okay, Swami's grace. We think, hey, what is this? This is unfair.
Exactly.
So that how is does your conductor fare in this?
So now just imagine, look at the same conductor, very helpful, polite and honest, has spent his entire career doing his job to the best of his ability. But suddenly he starts feeling that his colleagues who have not done their jobs well are also getting the same salary and perks like him. Not being able to see any significant impact of all that he has done, he loses interest and enthusiasm in his work.
This is
quite similar. In the sense, you know, I would picture him like this. You know, he's a person who still doesn't matter to him what the colleagues say or how the colleagues fare. But if he comes home and is... children or wife point out to him, no, you've not done anything. That might hurt.
Correct.
I feel it is like, you know, when I put myself in this situation, I'm reminded of one or two instances in my life when I felt like this. Really, I felt like this and it's horrible because I feel at that point I was being a good person, Prem. You know, I remember I was, forget what the context was, but I was in a competition for something. And when you see that another person gets it, you feel it's fine in a competition. After all, there's going to be one winner. So it's fine. It had to be him or him or him or me. It is him. So it's fine. But you know, this comes in when somebody who is not in that four, somebody who is far worse than you, who is bad than you, whom the world, if you ask generally, will say, any day you're better. And that person goes ahead. That really feels horrible. See, this is like, I don't mind, I don't expect it, as long as it goes to a deserving person. I don't mind not being the best employee, as long as a best employee goes. But if an employee of the first category that he spoke about is told that he is the best employee and I am supposed to applaud him and go shake hands with him or her and give him a bouquet, that I won't be able to tolerate, even if I don't have a desire of me personally getting it. How many times we have felt this, Prem, you know, in our limited vision, let's be honest, when we see Swami suddenly interacting with somebody whom we feel is not such a good guy, we feel, Swami, what is, you know, you don't speak to me, it's alright, Swami, but how can you speak to that guy? If you're speaking to that guy, I definitely deserve to be spoken to. Yes. Haven't you felt that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I feel this
and
is that.
I think it happens in any field of our, you know, existence, right. Whether it's in Prashantilam with Swami or with anything, whether it's, you know, it's our boss or recognition, you know. In fact, what is the issue over here? Again, this seems to be only an extension of the previous category.
Right.
But the issue over here is, at least the good part is, this person has put in a whole career. Right? That means he has shown consistency in doing excellent work. Okay? And he does not have much he's not looking at the rewards. But somewhere along the way, he's not able to maintain that level of consistency.
Or even if he has maintained it, there will be a kind of emptiness or, you know, unsatisfaction towards the end of the career. Saying that, you know, something was lacking.
You know, this is, I feel, where Swami's quote of love my uncertainty comes into play. See, there are, as long as everyone plays by the rules, we are happy. You know, it's like in a football match. You're a good player. In the recent World Cup, for example, Lionel Messi, he was given the golden ball. And he is known to be a very clean player who doesn't do any fouls or something like that. Let us imagine him. Okay, he's playing everything fine. He has done everything by the rules. In spite of that, he has never won a World Cup. And yet he continues to give his best for football because it doesn't bother to him who wins the World Cup as long as he plays his game well. That is how he has been doing. Now, what I'm saying is a hypothetical situation, not that it has happened. Now, just imagine everything is going on well. And now, when it's well balanced, suddenly the referee awards an unfair penalty. Just because technology is not used in football, video technology, the referee's decision is final. And everybody in the world knows that it's a wrong penalty, but it's awarded, that it's taken, and they lose. Now, at this point in time, Lionel Messi can feel really messed up. Because, you know, I have followed all rules, I have stuck by everything, I never felt bad, I never felt jealous, but this is outright unfair.
Right.
What I have done is gone down the drain, and a guy who has not done even one-tenth of what I have done is simply going ahead. Now, I feel disgruntled and sad.
I think, in a sense, you could say the third category of person, he's insured against certain amount of, you know,
that's like logical
extremes
insurance
of life, but not against all.
And what do you think is the chief reason for it?
That's because, though I'm saying that I don't expect to win that, I mean, or get that, I have my own set of rules. And I'm saying, for example, Lionel Messi, I'm in football because, you know, football stick to, there are certain rules which I implicitly feel that everybody must follow or life must follow. And if that is violated, I just can't stand it. Because
I think the important point you're making is the feeling that I am doing still, you know, the sense of me doing that, I am the doer, right? I mean, that is what is causing me to feel that in spite of me doing everything right, why did I get this? Why me?
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Someone like Arthur Ashe, I think so beautifully he put it. You know, today we have the brilliant US Open Arthur Ashe Stadium in Flushing Meadows. And Arthur Ashe had got AIDS, if I'm not mistaken. And everybody asked, Arthur, for the life that you led, why you? And so beautifully he answers. He says, when I won the Wimbledon, I never said, why me? When I won the US Open and was crowned as one of the greatest players in history of tennis, I didn't ask why me. Then now why am I asking why me?
But the problem there in that example, is that Arthur Ashe won Wimbledon and US Open. Why me when I've not got anything positive and I've still got AIDS and I'm dying? That might be a question.
So how do we overcome this? Oftentimes it will happen, all of us will not be able to win the highest pinnacle in why the world, even in our organizations or even in our families.
An insipid life that is simply struck down by a terrible blow.
Yes.
I mean, I've done everything good. I'm a normal guy whom maybe only 5 people know.
Like the bus conductor.
Yes. Done everything fine. And the bus conductor gets to know that not only is he not promoted, he has also got cancer.
Yes.
It is so unfair.
Yes. So, what is the ultimate level? So, what we have done is we have looked at ordinary action. We have looked at excellence in action. We moved over now to this selfless action. But even there's something even higher than the selfless action. And that is the last which Swami says is the ultimate kind of action. And that is sacred action or pavitra karma. That is when I am able to see that whatever I have done, okay, is sarva karma bhagavat prityartham. It is for bringing out the joy in the Lord's face. To see the Lord happy with whatever I have done, that is the ultimate gift. That is the ultimate recognition for me. I don't need anything other than that. Even more than my own self-esteem. Even more than what I think about myself. What God thinks about me is more important. That is the ultimate action. And here is where we come to the last kind of, the case. The same bus conductor. Just imagine someone like this. A man of few words. He's doing his job fantastically. Enjoys his job. Offers a very pleasant experience to his passengers. He goes out of the way informing them about their stop. He loves his wife, his two children, and spends a considerable portion of his life in spiritual and religious activities. How is that life?
In such a case, he may be struck with AIDS or cancer, and he may lose his place on earth, but he will definitely have found his place in the hearts of people.
Yes, and in the heart of God.
I think more than anything else, he would have had no regrets when he died. You know, he might not have got everything he set his eye upon. He might not have achieved everything that he wanted to, but he would have died a fulfilled and satisfied life.
Exactly.
Because as we started in the beginning, you know, we were saying we die as if we have never lived. He would die peacefully knowing that he has lived. Because even that is what even Kabir Das says. You know, when you're born, everyone around you is laughing and smiling and you're crying. Lead your life in such a manner that when you die, you have a smile on your face and everyone around is crying. When such a person leaves the earth, definitely that would be the scenario. He would die with a smile on his face, with everyone around him shedding tears for missing such a beautiful soul.
And we have also seen these kind of things happening, and Swami has in fact taught us. You know, I still remember that it was a 2001 Sankranti discourse in which Swami says that all the other children in other institutions, they play sports because they want to win medals
and prizes.
And they want to win prizes. But there's a big difference between why my students, in fact, that is what he's asking us to do. Why my students play sport and why other people play sports. They play sports for earning medals and accolades and, you know, medals, trophies. My student win, play so that Bhagwan is happy. To see a smile on Swami's face. And guess what? That everybody can get in this world, isn't it? To see their Lord happy, you need not grow to the top of the pyramid. Wherever you are, that is the top of the pyramid. Because your Lord is happy with whatever you are doing. A bus conductor's life can be the most fulfilling life. A teacher's life can be the most fulfilling life. Right up to the Prime Minister's life can be the most, you know, or probably the one who has won the biggest Nobel Prize. Okay, his life can be the most full. Every life.
Most fulfilling in this, also in the sense that, you know, others look and wonder what on earth have you got in life. Like as you said, Bill Gates had more than Warren Buffett. But he wondered what is this in Warren Buffett's life that is giving him so much joy that I want to go there. You know, I want to give up all the other things.
Exactly. And so in fact, it does not mean that you actually have to change your work. Right, when we said from engagement to meaning, it really does not mean that we have to find something, you know, something else that what we are doing. It does not mean that it is only in Narayan Seva or it is only in poor feeding or doing bhajans that I am going to find meaning in life. It could even mean that wherever I am right now, I could be just selling a few vegetables on the road. I could be probably just coding away a little software program and I could just silently offer that as Swami, this is part of the coding, I'm doing it for you. These vegetables, I'm selling it to you. Every doctor who's doing an operation says, Swami, this I'm doing it for you. And every doctor, every vegetable vendor and every software professional can find fulfillment in their life.
And because of equality of fulfillment, there may be no equality in the position, in the money, in everything else. But because of equality in fulfillment, then any job that you're doing becomes the best job to be in on the face of the earth. And I really believe in this because when anybody asks me, I personally feel that I am in the most beautiful job on the face of the earth, according to myself. I would not trade this job for any other job on the face of the earth. And if every one of us can feel that way, won't it be so beautiful?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe I'm just reminded of something which happened in Kodaikanal once, you know. some of my classmates were there in that trip which Swami went to. And one fine day, suddenly Swami said, you know, let's have a music program. So you can imagine, you know, these boys have gone to Kodaikanal first time, they're not used to the weather. Amma, you're a singer, you know what happens when you, you know, suddenly change of water and all that. You're stuck. And, you know, that was a very bad program that day. And boys themselves were not very happy with what was presented. And it was in public, so, you know, Swami is saying that these are my students who are performing. They didn't perform very well. But, you know, Swami didn't say anything. He smiled and he blessed all of them. Just as Swami was leaving the hall, this classmate of mine walked up to Swami and, you know, in a very sheepish manner, he told Swami, Swami, are you happy with the program? Okay, till then, Swami did not, no adverse comments were made. He just said, and he went up to Swami and said, Swami, are you happy with this program? Swami looked at him very sternly and Swami just one sentence, Swami said, he said, if you are happy with it, I'm happy with it. And walked away. And you know, even now when I meet that boy, he said, you know, that is actually a big mantra for me. Because Swami told me, if you find self-satisfaction in what you do, be assured that Swami will be satisfied with what you did. Swami will be happy with what you did.
Yes, that Atmatripti.
Atmatripti, that's exactly the word. Because, you know, many times we don't know. We might say that I'm doing it for Swami's happiness. If Swami is happy. How do you know if Swami is happy with
which
what
Swami?
You've done?
Yeah, which Swami is happy?
Swami says that when you find that full self-satisfaction, and when Swami says self-satisfaction, that happiness cannot be taken away by anything, any situation outside in life, anybody coming and telling anything.
And that self-satisfaction requires, I think, two important traits. One is honesty and one is courage. Because if we are dishonest, we can just fool ourselves. We are fooling ourselves only, nobody else, into thinking that we are self-satisfied. And at the same time, having courage to take those steps which may lead to losses in pleasure and engagement, but contribute actually to self-satisfaction. So if we are having honesty and courage, then only we will be able to march towards self-satisfaction.
If I can just put two different other words which Swami says. If you look at the level of, you know, excellence in action, when we reach the level of excellence in action, what is actually happening is we are getting self-confidence. And Swami says that for any mansion, the foundation is most important. And for this, yeah, self-confidence is the foundation. We move to the next level, which is Nishkama Karma. That is self-sacrifice, where I'm not doing it for anything else. I'm just sacrificing myself. Those are the walls. And finally, you have the roof, which is self-satisfaction, which is, the sacred action. I'm doing it for the sake of this, for myself. And ultimately, what you get?
The mansion of self-realization.
The mansion
wow.
of self-realization.
That was beautifully put.
And that, in fact, is the goal of our lives. And that is how we are going to get set and go for the life, or for the goal of our lives.
I think there's nothing more that needs to be said, and I think it's better left here.
That's what even the clock says, that you better leave it here.
Exactly, and that's exactly what even Chandu must be saying out there, ready to come in for his next program. Dear listeners, that is the end of our program today. On behalf of all of you, Brother Amai, thank you so much. And we do hope that you're going to come back to us again and again.
Because your presence definitely adds a lot to any satsang.
Right. And I think this topic was so very profound. I don't know about the listeners. I think we all have learnt it so much. And Swami would often say, everything is there inside. You just have to sit and think about it. And I'm sure everybody who listened to it felt that I already knew all this. But, you know, why aren't we acting upon it?
Yeah.
So I think the only prayer we can make to Swami is that, Swami, you've given us everything. Just give us the sincerity and the love to stick to all that. And as you put it, you know, achieve that self-realization, which is the only worthwhile goal that Swami has placed in front of all of us. So on behalf of Arvind, on behalf of Amai, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, offering this humble effort of us at Swami's Lotus Feet. Thank you, dear listeners, for being with us. In a short while, we'll be joined with Chandu.
उठाना अपने दिल के बल से जोड़ो प्रभु की कृपा को भाई कृपा से उसकी देखो पर्वत बन जाए राई गौरी सस्ते गौरी सस्ते उसकी दम से दम है हम में उसके लिए जिएंगे उसके नाम को लेकर हम सब उसका काम करेंगे प्रभु जी हाथ बढ़ाना सब मिलकर जब तक जाएंगे प्रभु जी बोझ उठाना साथी हाथ बढ़ाना
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai.